Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Wood Talk. Now here are three guys who like to take big pieces of wood and make them smaller. Mark, Shannon, and Matt.
All right, it is show number 522, and on today's show we're talking about sliding dovetails in thin stock, the best finish for a kitchen countertop, and a contractor table saw versus cabinet saw. But before we get to that, we want to let you know that Rockler brings... Okay, I wanted to change this up a little bit. I'm getting bored with the intro, so I just jumbled the words around, and it's going to be great. Ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, Rockler brings wood talk to you. Customers are helped by Rockler when they need to create things confidently, and they've been doing that for 5 years less than 70.
Oh my God.
Rockler, that's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
It's all passive voice. It makes you sound weak. Total passive voice. You sound a little wishy-washy.
Yeah. I know. I rewrote it like almost academically.
Come on.
So it's not
SEO
marketing.
Copywriting 101.
Megan, can you approve voice. That new ad read, please? I thought it was good. Okay, well, Rockler is giving away a $250 gift card to one lucky Wood Talk listener. Enter for your chance to win before April 30th at rockler.com/woodtalk. And there's another giveaway you should know about. It's got nothing to do with Wood Talk, but Rockler wants you to know. Rockler is giving away a Festool Capex. You know what that is, right?
Whoa. How can we?
That's a big expensive miter saw.
How come we're only doing a $250 gift card?
It kind of overshadows what we're doing, doesn't it?
Rockler has gotten generous.
Like an order of magnitude.
Ed, what's it matter, though? Wood Talk listeners know about
That's
it.
That's true.
Can get
mean,
in
yeah,
on it.
There's that, too.
What's the difference? How about we just change it? Wood Talk is also doing another giveaway on Rockler's site for the Festival Capex. Good news, everyone. You can learn more at rockler.com/March-Festival-Giveaway. And, of course, if you go to rockler.com, look on the homepage there. I double checked, there is a link to the giveaway if you're unsure of any of this, but two great giveaway opportunities there from the generous folks at Rockler.
Oh, that was amazing.
You know, all of that passive voice makes me think that you need to reword it every month. Like next month, you should reword it like Yoda.
Yeah.
And read it in a Yoda voice.
Okay.
This is all about finding the line at which Rockler goes, yeah, no.
This is a good time to really push it, though, because it's right at the beginning of a contract.
Right.
Right. You don't want to do this when they're really at, you know, making decisions. You want to do it after a decision has been made.
Too late now.
Because that's all I could think of is giving away a $250 gift card, Rockler is.
Yeah. That's, okay. No, we'll do the Yoda read next time. I like that.
Hey, good luck. Nice.
Very good.
I can't wait to hear that.
Thank you.
Anyway. Speaking of people can't
hey,
read, Matt,
it's my turn.
Go to Patreon.
You know what? If you want to help support the show, you can do so. You can go to our Patreon. That's patreon.com/woodtalk and sign up to become a patron of the show. This week we're thanking, let me scroll down because the list is so long and he's going to a separate page. Pepper, Tim Summers, Out of the Woodwork, Justin Williams, Irene Hahn, John, there's a lot of little letters there.
Come on, man. It's like a fellow Italian here. You should be able to get this.
Piccolo Lee.
Nope.
I don't know.
Wow.
Pick or Ellie. Pick or Ellie? I don't know. I've got no idea, John. Wow. It's a good one.
That's Minnesotan Italian
from,
right
from
there.
From far away, yeah. The I's and the L's all look the same. It's like a bunch of bars. All right, Steve Hummel. Oh, my, I lost my spot. Joel Albon. Sean Coffrey. No, there's no R. Coffey. And then Ian Hampson.
Well, there you go. Did you guys see that Margaret put up the funniest post? So subtly funny, but it made me crack up. On Instagram, where use our name butchering service, donate on Patreon.
That's awesome.
Yeah, very good. Margaret's the best. All right. So let's get to what's on the bench. I'll go first. I'm doing a TV console, finally. The thing that I had designed and made the imagery and had my buddy Eric, you know, do that.
You're actually going to do it?
I am doing it.
It's not going to look happening. As good.
It will not. It absolutely won't. So that was like before Christmas, well before Christmas.
Was it really?
Then I got into this whole like, it really was. Oh. Yeah. So I had the Christmas break. Then I had the tool swap out fiasco, where it's kind of hard
turn
to build
into a tool review channel. Cause that's kind of what I feel like. It's the vibe I'm getting.
Kind of what I'm into. Well, you know, this show is turning into a content, production,
You know what I'm looking for next though. I'm looking for a detailed review of the miter gauge that came with the Stossop.
Do you know where that is?
In the trash can.
I sold it to someone for the cost of shipping.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was. I'm not going to use it. And some dude was like, hey, I see you have that saw stop there and you got that other miter gauge. You're going to be using that one? I was like, no. And he's like, well, I'll pay for it.
Okay.
Well, just pay for shipping.
That works.
So I sold it to him for like $20.
Oh. Didn't know that was.
Because the only reason I would have held onto it is to use it as an example for something in the future. And I'm like, it's
fine. You know, I have a lot of things. For that exact purpose.
Yeah. Well, I'd much rather go to someone who's going to use it for woodworking and not use it to make videos. You know what I mean? Like what it was intended for.
Hey, can I borrow that? I'll give you $20 back to borrow it. Mm-hmm. Then I'll send it back to you again.
Yeah. I could find an example of a bad miter gauge if I really need to. It's like a stock miter gauge. It's what you would expect it to be. It's fine. It'll work just fine for him. I think the only thing I can really say about this TV console is I had a couple of those moments where I've already worked a lot of the stuff out in SketchUp and a lot, you know, it's basically legs with side panels that are in grooves in those legs. There's a bottom panel that then also gets captured in grooves. Then there's mortise and tenon joinery. It's slip mortise and tenons. So there's just like, once you actually go through all of those steps and you do it very methodically, and then you look at one of these legs, it's just like littered with holes. It's like Swiss cheese. And the rhyme or reason for how you arrive there, it just reminds me back to earlier times in my woodworking where I would see a piece of furniture further down the line in its production schedule. And I'd be like, I don't even know how your brain gets to that point. But somehow over time, like doing this brute force enough, I've gotten to the point where while I do still find that hard to like suss out and look at the finished version of that and figure out how it's all done. If I'm the one building it from the beginning, I know the steps. I can make those steps. But if I look at it in the big picture, it's confusing as hell. But it was just one of those times where I would like remembered very quickly back to, which really wasn't that long ago when that stuff would have just made me want to throw in the towel. But once you take it in this like step one, step two, step three, that sort of format, anybody can do it. You just need to know what those steps are.
It's that same thing that kind of has me encouraging people to like ditch the plans and like build your own stuff, because when it is all laid out, like you don't go through that discovery process. You don't do that engineering.
Yeah.
So I feel like, and I've heard from a lot of woodworkers like, I've been doing this for 20 years, you know, but I've always built off plans.
Right.
And then they like kind of swear off plans for like a year. And they're like, I'm such a better woodworker. Like I've been doing it for 20 years and had been on a total plateau. Until you actually have to figure all that stuff out and don't just have it like spoon fed to you.
Well, to know
makes
why
a huge difference,
you know, like there's a lot in this I have a bottom panel that has to engage with the side rails, let's say, and those side rails also have a quarter inch panel that makes up the side of the cabinet. So where that bottom groove interfaces with the groove that holds the panel in place on that side rail, you got to be really close. How deep does it go? How far vertically is it located? Because at a certain point, you're just leaving yourself this little slender piece of material, and you may not realize that if you haven't gone through all of those steps. So there is a lot of like, you got to think through that process, and it does make you a better woodworker to do it. But I think that is one of the dangers when you look at that final thing. If you haven't gone through those thought processes, you know, you can definitely copy it, but doesn't mean you understand why something was done.
Right. And then you go to glue it up and you're like, oh, crap. You have to like, oh, this interferes with this, or this has to be glued in first before this can be glued in.
Yeah, for sure. So anyway, it's coming along, but I'm dragging my butt because of work. Like, I refer to work as the things that are not building furniture. All those other things that have to get done.
I like that. I like that a lot. Me
down.
I may have to borrow that one.
Mm-hmm. So that's it for me. What about you, Matt?
I've been doing work.
Mark will send it to you for $20.
That's right. For the cost of shipping. Borrow it.
Oh, man. So we are in a couple of weeks off from the home thing, or we're calling, whatever we're calling that. We're waiting for the weather to warm up a little bit. So it's supposed to be like in the 40s next week, which is going to be nice. Ooh, we're going to get back to doing some outside stuff again. So we're just taking a little break. So I'm doing work, as Mark would say.
There you go.
I'm into warehouse mode. So I got a shipment of chair kits that came in last week, I think. And somehow I got overwhelmed with orders without ever actually announcing that I had them back in, which was cool and terrifying because I'm like, well, okay, now I got all these orders to pack. I'm doing that. And then the other thing I have going on there is I got a like giant slab surfacer machine thing that I decided to put together myself for air quotes fun, because that's something that makes sense when you're me. So I'm getting close to being done with that, and it's going to be going over to the warehouse and living over there. But I have the whole table set up over there, and then the, I guess the gantry or the cutter head part is sitting on my workbench on the Rubo. But one little issue I had, what I didn't really think about, or I did a little bit, but getting the gantry out of the shop is going to be a little more complicated than I kind of thought. So I decided, I'm like, oh, I'll build it on my workbench. So I'm making a video about it. So I'm like, oh, I'll do it on the workbench. It's well lit. I can like get angles all around it as I'm working. I'm like, okay, I have it assembled. I'm like, oh, I could just sneak it out the door with the skid steer or whatever. I can't because it's so wide that I have to be coming like directly straight into the door. And right behind that door is a giant sawmill. So to get this, which hasn't moved all winter, so it is well frozen in place.
It's stuck to the ground.
It's stuck to the ground and like covered in snow and ice that's been kind of melting. So the timing's going to work out so that like maybe next week sometime when it's like hot out and the stuff's melting, I can pop the sawmill free from the ground. Get it out of the way, and then I can drive into the shop with the skid steer, pick this gantry thing up off my workbench so I can have my workbench back again to do, you know, wood stuff and get that thing the heck out of here, and I can start using it maybe. That's my
See,
life.
I anticipate this going like in a month, Mark. We're going to hear from Matt saying, you remember how I wasn't going to put my workshop in the barn?
Yeah.
I've decided that I now have a slab surfacing room and I have a workshop in the barn.
There you go.
That might happen.
Yeah.
I saw you doing that and that assembly, and I'm like, that's a rather large thing you got there. And I just assumed, you know, that you have it all planned out. You always have this stuff planned out and you've got the machines to move these things. It's kind of funny that you're sort of painted into a corner.
Getting access. It's not like I can't, it's like, okay, but it's not like it's a big deal. The machines move the things. It's just like, it becomes like this process. Okay, like I move this to get this, to get this, to do that.
It's not as easy as you thought it was going to be.
I mean, I didn't think it was going to be easy. But this is going to be a little more hassle.
You didn't think you'd be stuck. You didn't think you'd be
I think it's a perfect.
Ground.
I think it's a perfect opportunity to add a rubber tire crane to your arsenal of tools.
Oh, good.
And just lift the roof off and just fly it out of there. You know,
well, it's time to up the ante. Enough with these small.
Yeah, it'll fit nicely next to the telehandler. It'll look really good. You get them painted the same. It'd be really cool.
Just funny. Awesome. More things. Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
You, that need, to have, like you need to have a fleet of
things. I already feel like I have a fleet of things.
I think he does, doesn't he?
I'm pretty sure I do.
Yeah, I guess
I think people would say I do.
I think I would say you do.
Very nice.
All right. Shannon, what are you doing, dude?
I've had some artwork. Yeah, you can call it artwork. Nerd artwork.
You can call
comic
it
book artwork. Yeah.
I would call that art. Come on.
I call that. Well, you say artwork and people think like, you know, real fancy stuff. I'm talking like, well, yeah, this is fancy stuff. I've got an inked Spider-Man drawing. I've got a Matt Fraction Hawkeye drawing.
Ooh.
And then I've got, actually, I don't know who drew these, but I've got like comic book character renderings of all the guys from Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash, you know, that show Comic Book Men that was on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I've got like at the beginning of the show, they're all like superhero type characters. Well, mm-hmm. somebody did those drawings in, what do you call those things? Gels, like inked drawings on
yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Translucent stuff,
but I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what it's called.
Yeah. Something fancy. So I've had those for a while and I haven't really had a place to kind of put them in the house. So when I finally redid my downstairs and kind of turned it into like a gym area, mm-hmm. finally have kind of the room that will work. So I've been saying I need to sit down and frame these things. So it's kind of turned into like batch production, just cranking out frames and playing around with different profiles, you know, because they're all very contemporary things. You don't want to put like a heavily ornate kind of frame on comic book art. Mm-hmm. So I've been having fun with like flatline chamfers and things like that. So I just finished up a frame of a framed picture, framed an autograph picture of Adam West and Burt Ward in full Batman and Robin regalia.
Oh, very sweet. Cool.
So yeah, my gym, my pain cave is turning into the ultimate nerd cave. Now I've got comic book art and, you know, Adam West autographs and everything, but it's been a lot of fun. I've just finished up my sixth frame. I think I need one more. But yeah, it's one of those little projects that you've kind of like set aside for a while and figure one of these days I'll get to it. Mm-hmm. And it's been a lot of fun. So
awesome, man.
Yes, sir.
I'm all for it. I love decorating with that stuff. My whole office is comic book art and Star Trek and Star Wars references everywhere.
Yeah. It's you like know, the irony is the stuff that I call work that takes me to the lumberyard is starting to look a lot like Matt Cremona's fun. Uh-oh. Because I've been sawing logs, playing with our wood miser.
Isn't it fun though?
And nice. Like the ultimate like dream workshop build, mm-hmm. we are completely redoing our millwork on site, not the architecture millwork up in Pennsylvania, our like linear molding run millwork. And been working with the mill foreman on like planning the runs and like, you know, in feed and out feed and moving things in and out. So it's like planning your workshop.
I can't do it.
Nice. Yeah.
Anyway,
usually you don't
plan. That's what I was, that's, yep. There you go. Yep.
The runs ruin what you have planned.
Plan for run prevention, foreshortening of runs. Anyway, you know, you get to plan out like the average hobbyist workshop and what was the square footage of your big shop, Mark?
In Arizona. 1800.
Yeah. I'm talking like 25,000 square feet. It's really fun.
Wow.
With $100,000 molding machines and,
yeah,
and
no kidding, man.
You know, yeah, it's kind of fun. It's one of those things that, you know, if I wanted to be completely unrelatable, I could, you know, film this whole thing, but yeah, it's kind of interesting when, certainly it's not that money is no object, but from the hobbyist perspective, yeah, it's a whole different playing field. And looking into like automation technology and machines and chain runs and things like that to not only sort and grade boards without a single person being involved, but then how it does like collating of the boards. Think about like a, you know, fancy copy machine and how it can collate everything and staple it and ring bind it. You can do the same thing with lumber, you know, and the scanners and lasers and oh, it's awesome. It's a bit of a Tim Allen moment. In other words,
nice.
It's been a lot of fun.
Sounds good. All right. We got a couple of announcements. We haven't done these in a while. Turns out one of us was paying attention to what's going on in the rest of the world. So
not me.
Yep. I have a couple things here. So if you haven't heard, you guys know Jimmy DiResta. He and a bunch of other bearded dudes have a show on Netflix called Making Fun. And I knew this was coming out just when they started teasing about it. So the cool thing about it was Mateo was watching Netflix one morning and it was, you know, they kind of put it across his plate and he's got a kid's account on there. So they definitely are pushing it to kids to see this. And I walked in and he's just watching it. I was going to tell him, hey, you should check this out when you get a chance. But he had already found it and was watching one of the episodes. And I watched it for about 5 minutes. I didn't get a chance to thoroughly dig into this whole thing yet, but, it's a fun premise. It's basically making things that come from the imagination of children and the guys are kind of bringing them to life. So pretty cool premise. And if you got Netflix, it's there waiting for you if you want to check it out and probably a good thing to watch with the kids if you want to get them kind of encouraged to start making things. Have you guys, any of you watched this yet?
I got about halfway through the first episode and then had to like go do work. Yeah, it's a really interesting premise. I like the idea, and you know, it's a big focus on the kids.
Yeah.
I think at least the first part that I saw, you know, they basically do like a conference where all the bearded dudes, to quote Mark, are sitting in the workshop, and the kids call in over like, you know, a video conference, and they're throwing around ideas. And it's a lot of what you would expect kind of Jimmy DiResta sass there to be. I think it's a really cool premise. So I'll dig into it a little bit further at some point. My Netflix queue is a little bit daunting at this point.
It's funny too, because there is this whole like extra thing happening that, I mean, maybe we shouldn't even talk about it or bring attention to it. I don't know, but they're getting their balls busted like big time. By some folks on Twitter who are not happy with the format of the show being five bearded guys, that there's no people of color, there's no women. And it was interesting because I thought about this. That's a lot of pressure, like to come up with this idea, to make this show happen, and then to put it out to the world. And I was trying to think as I'm watching this criticism come in, whether it's fair or not, I'm not here to judge. But I'm watching the criticism going, yeah, you know, in 2022, it's kind of difficult to make a show like this without having representation. That's the expectation that's out there. And then I saw Paul Jackman is one of the main guys on the show. I saw someone level that criticism that they, you know, really wish they would have seen, had more females on the show, or, you know, just other people, the variety of people there. And his response was actually as like as sensible as you might think, which is just, well, look, the show idea was about five good friends who would come together to try to make these crazy things that these kids are requesting. And the show was about, it would be like saying there's not enough representation on this show, but the show exists because the three of us are friends and we like to talk. So it makes it very difficult for them to shoehorn, you know, just for political correctness, to shoehorn that sort of variability into the show when that's not how the show was, you know, conceived. So it's a very interesting position. I can't agree or disagree with the criticism that's happening, but I thought it was a great answer to say, yeah, but this was the idea. And now like, you want me to change the idea. Who am I kicking off the show to bring someone else on the show? So I don't know. I thought it was a good answer.
Now that I agree. And you know, I hadn't even thought about it. That's probably because I'm a white dude. I don't have a beard though. I can't really grow one.
Slacker. Either,
but slacker. I know. I feel slightly discriminated against because it's a bunch of bearded guys, but no, there's certainly a plethora now of female talent in the woodworking world. So it's not like that have to go too far. But at the same time, like how many shows have you watched where you know that somebody said, oh, we can't do this. We don't have enough, you know, diversity in here. Yeah. So let's plug in a person here, plug in a person here. And now we have this, you know, rainbow of presenters and you're kind of like, there's no chemistry between them all.
Right.
So I get what Paul's saying, you know, because I do think from what I saw, there is chemistry with those guys and the way they're kind of, you said they're getting their balls busted, but they actually push back to the kids, you know, in the pitch session where the kids are pitching a fart humidifier. That was the one thing that sticks in mind, you know, and the guys are like, yeah, that's stupid, you know, and it's very cool. And I've always been a fan of, speaking as someone who doesn't have kids, I've always been a fan of the idea of not like treating kids like kids, but like treating them as equals and not trying to talk down to them. Mm-hmm. And this is more my wife talking at this point as a teacher. She's on equal playing field with all of her kids, regardless, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth graders. She talks to them like they're equals and encourages them to talk to her, you know, the same way. And I think it just ends up being much more powerful. That is one thing I will say that I liked about this show is it's about the kids. It's not about the five bearded dudes.
Yeah.
And making their dreams come to life and encouraging them to invent things and let their imagination run wild. So I appreciate the criticism, but at the same time, I encourage people to kind of take a step back and remember it's not about the builders. It's about the kids.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah, totally.
Granted, I've only seen half of one episode, so I could be completely off the mark here.
The whole point is they're having fun, you know, they're, you know, doing things to, you know, build these crazy, useless things, you know, that kids want to see made come to life. But I think it's the whole point is to be inspirational. And I think if the genesis of this idea was around these five friends, how do you morph that into something that fits through this new filter that everything has to go through these days, just to make sure everyone feels included? It's a tough line to walk. I don't envy it, but either way, I do think overall it's a positive thing that a show like that is, it seems to be doing really well too. So that's good news.
Well, and on the flip side, the other show that Durst is involved in is Making It with Nick Offerman and Amy Poehler. And that is as diverse as it gets.
Yeah.
You know, contestants are from all walks of life, you know, shape, size, sex, creed, everything. Yep. So yeah, there you go. Anyway.
Okay.
Moving on.
What's that next one?
I'll grab this one because I dropped it in. Blue Spruce has released a new honing guide, which at first I was like, oh boy, another honing guide. But I got to admit, this is pretty cool. It looks like a Mars rover, though.
It does.
Like the first time I looked at it, or like something out of the Matrix, like all the knurled knobs reminds me of those hovercraft things that they flew around in, like Morpheus and Neo flew around in.
Yeah.
Very, very Matrixy like thing. What I don't know, and what's interesting is like when I click through to the page, there's no capacity numbers. It looks like it's designed for chisels.
Yeah.
But does it fit plane blades? I don't know. It doesn't look like it's terribly wide, and they show that it fits on a lot of stones. So I imagine, you know, smaller plane blades, but you would think that they would put somewhere on the sales page, this also works on plane blades, or it fits up to, you know, and it is interesting how they talk about how it was made for Blue Spruce chisels. And you look at it and go, okay, well, you know, Lee Nielsen would fit in there as well. Veritas would fit in it, but they're very focused on, it fits Blue Spruce chisels, you know, buy more Blue Spruce chisels to go with this specialty Blue Spruce honing guide. But yeah,
it does say
kind of interesting.
In addition to working with shorter blades, blah, blah, smaller footprint, simply clamp your chisel in the guide. I don't think they're even pretending this is for plane blades.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think maybe like,
which is really interesting.
Blue Spruce, I mean, if you're looking at servicing what they produce, they don't make plane blades.
They don't make plane blades. Yeah. Kind of a ballsy move, though.
It's a ballsy move.
How many people?
It's also $200.
Well, yeah, that too. Like, how many people want to have like a chisel honing guide and a plane blade honing guide? Maybe, I don't know. They may be out there, but at this point, my sharpening is to try to keep it as simple as possible.
Yeah.
But anyway, it looks cool.
You don't even use a guide.
It gets the bling factor for me.
Yeah. What do you know?
Well, that was part of my evolution, Matt.
What do you know?
I used to use a guide.
And you're enlightened and elevated. Why are you even looking at this?
Yeah.
Why are you bringing yourself down to even talk about this?
Oh, Lord.
Well, here's the thing, though. That's pretty expensive. The Lee Nielsen honing guide, $125. Veritas Mark II, the whole set, $129. What do you got? A little side clamper dealy from Veritas, the side clamping version, $46. And a lot of those will take plane blades too. So yeah, this is, I mean, it looks nice. It's gorgeous, but that's a heavy duty price tag.
Yeah. I like the rubber wheels. Mm-hmm. I like the way the wheels are angled so that it looks very, very stable in use, which I think would be nice, but yeah. If it does in fact have limited capacity and like only 1.5-inch chisel fits in there, I would have a major problem with that.
Well, and one thing I've learned, like just goofing around with various honing guides, you don't really know its limitations until you have it in your hands. A lot of these things do not become obvious until you go, well, okay, I got my little skew chisel. I'm going to do, oh, wait a minute. it doesn't fit this plane blade. You don't know until you're actually working with it, which makes it a pretty... Any of these can be a little bit tricky to buy unless you know for sure what that total capacity is.
That just sounds like another show item for you to do.
There you go.
How big is that? How big is your budget for that new segment?
Oh, it's
adventure there.
I'll spend whatever I have to piss people off. It's so worth it at any price.
You know, it's hard because sometimes you can spend a little tiny bit and get a lot of yield, or you can spend a lot and not get any yield either. There's no direct correlation cost to piss offness. No.
The problem with the review thing is it's really guided by my interest. So if I personally need a thing and I can't decide which one to get, then my brain goes, well, I can make the excuse of I'm going to do a review and a comparison. So now I have to buy all four of these and then I've got a video to do. just doing this for the sake of doing toll reviews, no thanks.
No thanks.
Not fun.
No,
we're not, I'm going to take yet. A hard pass. Nope, not yet. Okay. I'm not that desperate.
I mean, how long have you been doing this? Like almost coming up on 20
years? A long time.
15 years.
Some nice dude in the guild group on Facebook put up a post with one of my early videos. And he's like, I just wanted to say thanks to Mark for, after all these years, still coming up with like great ideas and cool things to do on his show. And I'm like, I'm glad people think that. I don't know that I feel that I've earned that praise because I've done a lot of dumb things.
Like, well, and I saw that particular post and he was citing your trip to the lumberyard video, which I have to admit is my favorite Nicole Spagnuolo cameo.
Yeah.
That was a good She's brilliant in that movie. That was the peak of her that content was it. Career right there.
I think we could thank the director, to be honest, but okay, go ahead. Yeah, that was a good one. So anyway, that's an expensive honing guide. Go check it out. Comes in blue and black as well. So you got that going for you.
I'm sorry. I can't let that go. But when did we start choosing colors for our honing guides as well? It's like, you're not buying a t-shirt here, folks. Well, I love that they're
Woodpeckers
color choices.
Owns them now, right? So yeah. They're stuck with red. I think Woodpecker's just like, well, shoot, we're going to try some blue and black. Let's really, you know, kick off our shoes and have some fun here.
I just love that now there's a drop down box on your sales page for your honing guide to choose your color.
Yeah.
That's nice.
This is
Bridge the, City, eat your heart out. They just took it to the next level.
It's the influencer impact here. That's what's going on.
Oh, it's true. It's true. Oh, well, you know, Mark, you can have a honing guide that matches the rest of your tools. I know that's important.
Yes.
That is important to me. Yeah. Well, you know who else also enjoys a nice blue anodized aluminum?
Oh, very nice.
Thank you.
Wow. I like a lot of blue.
Wow. Wood.
That's right. It's Rockler, baby.
That might be the best one.
Thank you. Did that on the fly too. They've got classes. I don't know if you know this about them. If you're ready to learn more about woodworking techniques, Rockler classes and demonstrations can be an exciting step in the right direction. Presented by members of Rockler's friendly and knowledgeable staff, as well as special is the word I'm trying to say, guests, these in-store sessions have something to offer woodworkers of all skill and experience levels. Topics range from wood turning, cabinet building, finishing techniques, woodworking with a CNC machine, and many more.
That's not woodworking. What are we talking about?
Well, let's not repeat that. If actually take that question with you to Rockler, talk to them about it, and ask, is this really woodworking what we're doing here?
Oh,
so you
please.
Can visit rockler.com and find all the stores near you, and you can sign up. And if you're not near a store, here's what you're going to do. You're going to check out their website for all of their educational resources, including their videos, articles, and free step-by-step project plans. It's all there at rockler.com and all the blue anodized aluminum you could possibly ask for. I got to say, if you go to their website right now, if you, who knows, their people are going to hear this like a week from right now. The way that they're like lighting some of their stuff, like their router tables with that blue and gray and like good shadows, it's just looking, I don't want to curse. I'm trying not to say a bad word, but I mean something good. It looks cool. Like Rockler's branding has morphed from like reliable, great woodworking company to like, now that looks pretty cool. Like that. I want to see the drop down with the various colors here. This is hitting style points. Which you don't need to in woodworking, right? But they're getting style points.
You definitely do.
It counts for something.
A lot.
I sure. like it.
Good.
Anyway, you're
supposed according to Blue Spruce, about $80.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, anyway, store classes. You want to learn more about woodworking? Tired of just, quick videos on YouTube? Well, you can get it right from the people who know what they're doing. Head over to rockler.com and check all that good stuff out. So okay. We got questions here, guys. Shannon, you want to take the first one?
We got questions. This one's from Andrew. He says, hi, guys. Love your show. I'm making a stacked set of shelves with sides and vertical styles connected with sliding dovetails. I know that probably only makes sense in my own head. I cannot do sliding dovetails by hand anymore due to my arthritis. Ouch. I find myself looking at my router and thinking, can I route a 3/8-inch board? Is it thick enough for enough of a router bit to even have enough grip/bite? And would you say that is safe enough? I have brain fog and cannot wrap my gray cells around it. Please help. So I kind of chose this question because I'm hoping for a little bit of input from you guys because I haven't cut a sliding dovetail with a router in like 9-10 years. I have done it in a 3/8-inch board with hand tools with no problem whatsoever. The biggest limitation is actually not the socket, the female side of the joint, but usually the tail part. Because when you get to a really thin board, what you have to worry about is the neck of that dovetail being even thinner. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're joining a 3/8 inch board to a 3/8 inch board, the maximum width of that tail at the bottom of the tail, if you will, is going to be 3/8 of an inch, right? So it means the neck is going to be probably at least a 1/16, if not more, narrower than that. So you're going to have this really, really fragile section at the neck of the dovetail. The socket itself should be fine. Like if you were to, you know, do half the thickness, 3/16 of an inch deep, you still have that mechanical junction. You could possibly alter the angle, but that's a little hard to do with a router bit. You know, you can buy different angled dovetail bits. So I don't know. It's certainly possible by hand, but doing it with a, 20,000 RPM router is a little terrifying. You know, work holding tiny, skinny pieces. I would definitely want to back it up and, you know, double stick tape it down to a thicker board and all that fun stuff. But, yeah, I don't know. I would worry about the male part more than the female part of the joint myself. But I can say it's possible doing it by hand.
Yeah, and you're limited by the router bit itself, too. You may have to be doing a little bit of digging to find a really tiny profile router bit to make that female side small enough.
Oh, yeah. Right. Of course. Yeah. This is why I'm glad I asked you guys. I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah, you're very limited in your selection of router bits at the base, at the narrowest. They're only going to get so narrow, which is why hand-cut dovetails versus machine-cut dovetails, you can almost always tell that it's a machine-cut dovetail because your pins and tails are only going to get so small.
Right. Yeah, certainly not.
Router bit.
You know, if you consider the shank as a 1/4 inch at smallest. Yeah. You know, you're not going to find a profile that's going to be smaller than 1/4 inch. Not that I could see. That wouldn't be super fragile and break off and terrify me to use.
Well, and I think depending on the structure, you just go with something that's really shallow using one of these standard bits and just see how strong it is. I mean, sometimes with certain joints, you don't need to go as deep as we think at times. Sometimes a good 1/8 of an inch, if it's a nice, you know, decent hardwood and a good crisp joint. If it's a captured thing, whatever it is you're putting in there, that 1/8 of an inch with some glue actually just might be enough.
Yeah. And, you know, he doesn't really, I mean, he talks about he's making a stack set of shelves. I don't really know what the 3/8 inch is. I mean, I would assume that's the socket side of the joint. So maybe whatever the shelf is thicker, you know, and it's just the styles that are relatively thin, in which case I actually think, you know, we talk about, like Mark's beginning of this, he talked about how he's removed so much of the wood in the leg that you just got this tiny little sliver left over. Yeah. But once you actually fill all those voids with loose tendons, with integral tendons, whatever, and glue it in place, all that wood is back, right? The structural integrity of the leg is back because you've plugged up all the holes.
Back. Yeah.
Yeah, it's back. So yeah, the weakness that might occur by routing out half the thickness of a 3/8 inch board kind of disappears once you fill it with that tail and glue and everything. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's not really a limiting factor. So yeah, I say try it as long as your tail board can be achieved. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah, it's worth experimenting with a little bit. Okay, got a question here from Devin. Thanks us for not quitting. He says, what's your favorite finish for a kitchen countertop? I think this is funny since like last week we talked about not doing wood countertops. Good question for me to answer then. He says, I'm remodeling my kitchen and putting in a hard maple counter. I'm torn between all the different approaches of how one might do the top. Should I do a hard film finish like water locks or a spar varnish, or maybe a simple environmentally friendly penetrating oil like tried and true? Pardon me. Something else, I'd love to hear what you guys as woodworkers would put on a countertop in your own busy homes. Well, I think granite is what we decided last time.
Anything
right?
But wood.
You know, if I'm addressing this as like, if I was presented with a wooden countertop, what would I do? So I think some of this falls on, you got two primary things to be concerned about. One is who's using it. Like, what are their expectations for how it's to be used? Is it actually going to be a cutting surface, or is it simply acting as a countertop and all cutting and food contact, all that stuff will happen on a supplementary surface? If that's the case, then I do think there's some merit to going with a thick film finish that protects this surface, because really what you want to do is protect it from spills, keep it looking nice, and make it something that you can clean periodically. But you are now putting on a thick, heavy duty film. If you are expecting that there's going to be a little bit of, more interaction with this surface, then I am in favor of finishes that tend to also be a little bit more environmentally friendly, ones that can be easily renewed. They won't look like a film, but it will repel moisture and staining and things like that. And if you get a knife scratch or something in that, you could actually do like a spot cleanup on that and a little bit of a sanding or smoothing, and then hit it with some more of that same finish. Those also tend to be the more environmentally friendly. So that's kind of the second side of this. If a priority here is a low to no VOC finish, that's very good for you and the environment, you're probably going to want to stay away from those films. You're going to be on the opposite end of the spectrum, looking at some of the hard wax oils or a tried and true multiple coats of diluted tongue oil is always an option too. That's very, pleasant, especially if you dilute with orange. What is that? D-limonene or whatever it is. That orange solvent stuff smells great. So that's always an option too. Man, I love using that stuff on like kitchen utensils. I want to drink it.
Yeah.
It's good. So that's really what it comes down to. You know, you got two major factors there. How are you using it? And then what are the expectations for, VOC environmentally friendly and also repairability? But there, I can't tell you which one to do. All those would probably work. I think for myself these days, I've gone way more, to the other side of the spectrum in avoiding finishes that off-gas too much or are a little bit more, annoying to work with. So I probably would be going for a finish that requires more, a little more maintenance, a little bit more renewal, but tends to be a little bit easier to work with, safer to work with, and, no VOC. But that's just me personally.
One thing I will say to you, Devin, is make sure you listen to the next episode because we have some kickback from a wood countertop owner.
We do indeed.
And he talks about his finish.
Make sure you
just come really back poor planning on my part when I put together these show notes and didn't put great that teaser. One in this episode.
Yeah. It's all good.
Okay. You guys good on the countertops thing for now? Until next time?
Yep, for the moment.
Until next time.
My question is from Justin. He loves the show and loves the banter. Beginning to look for a new table saw. Currently has a job site saw that is mounted on a rolling storage cart and gets the job done. But he's had it for 3 years. Dust collection is abysmal and the fence is not super accurate. When he sets it, he has to constantly push it back into the table to score it up before locking it down and have to double check all the measurements to make sure there's a move as you're, locking the fence down. Maximum rip capacity is 26 inches. The table's not very stable when extended to full length. I really want something more accurate and consistent and something I can rely on for many years to come. Yeah, as a hobbyist woodworker that mostly spends weekends in a two-car garage that turns into a one-car garage in the winter when the wife's car comes in. Yeah, I know. It gets cold there in Wisconsin, but I'd rather park outside myself than lose the whole shop for 5 months. My question is this. We're to the question now. In a small shop where I'm using the table saw for almost every project on almost every weekend of the year, making anything for small boxes, the tables and bookcases, and wanted to buy a saw that I won't need to replace for many years. Do you think a good contractor saw will meet my needs, or should I spring for a full cabinet saw? I'm trying to be somewhat thrifty, but surprisingly, my wife was the one that said I should consider spending more money to get what I want. That's a good one. Okay.
Does she have a sister? Sorry. That's what guys say, right? That's what you're supposed to say.
Yeah. Yes. I don't know if our wives will appreciate that so much, but yeah, that's
no. Sorry.
So I thought I would approach this question with my sort of experience going from a contractor saw to a cabinet saw. So I had the granite top.
You had one of those?
I did. I loved it.
That's cool.
The good old
fantastic. Look at you. That saw was amazing.
That's great.
And then I went and I got the saw stop. So it was my first proper, cabinet saw or whatnot. Yeah. I will say this, the cheaper, the rigid, the contractor saw was just as accurate and it gave me just as good a results as the saw stop. The biggest difference between the two, in my opinion, is just the overall sort of user experience. Mm-hmm. The saw stop is far more smooth in all of the mechanisms. Like on the rigid, if you're trying to, you have to like really turn that hand wheel, put some like muscle into turning it to raise and lower the blade. it's not as smooth as a soft stop. Like, oh, you just one little finger and you just kind of crank it up and down, no problem. And then the fence on the soft stop is like wicked super smooth. And the ridge is kind of like it binds a little bit, but you put it where it's going to go, you lock it down, and it doesn't, like, you don't have to check it like you do on a job site saw. So I don't really have a good answer for you. I mean, I think if you can afford it and your wife's cool with it, I would just go and just get the last saw you ever buy. But if you're looking to be a little more thrifty, I think you're going to see a huge, like, night and day difference going from a job site saw to a contractor saw. Just those two saws styles compared to each other, completely night and day difference. The fact that you got to, like, check the fence every time you set it. Mm-mm. Yeah, no, that's no. Nope. And, like, it's not going to tip over on you. Probably. Right. I mean, it could. I mean, you're really doing some ridiculous if you tip over a contractor saw. But, you know, you do you.
I'm gonna say this knowing fully, like, that this makes me sound bad, but I'm going to say it anyway.
I love it.
The thought of using a job site table saw on a regular basis for woodworking would probably send me to a knitting class.
Yeah.
Send you to knitting.
Oh, yeah.
I knew that was coming. Yeah.
Well, like, I talk about, like, the difference in power between an actual, like, induction motor and a universal motor. Yeah. Like, it's...
God, just the sound.
And that too.
The scream of those things.
Well, and think about it. Like, woodworking can be difficult enough. But once you get something set up and you expect it to be straight, or you expect that fence to lock in the same position dependably and not be out of, you know, alignment with the blade, like, these are things that you should not have to deal with. But people do. It's just the way things go. But I can't imagine having that that additional frustration and that additional variable that goes beyond, am I just a decent woodworker? It's like, no, now I have to babysit a machine. And I have so much respect for people who are on tight budgets and that's all they have, but they still get things done in spite of that. I love it. I think it's great. And I'm in a very privileged position to not have to think about that stuff. But my gosh, what a nightmare. Like, get rid of that job site thing if it's in the cards as fast as possible. And if you're already talking about the cabinet saw, don't even think about the contractor. Get that cabinet saw. You got permission, you got space, you got the money. Don't even ask a question. Get that cabinet saw. You are going to be happier.
I've never heard you
sounds
so
like it's basically the center of his workshop. So yeah, it's the tool.
He's using it on every project, right? Like, this is the guy who should have that cabinet. The contractor saw probably is going to be fine. But I do think eventually a guy like this is going to hit those limitations too there and just skip it. Get right to the one you want and start making some
sense. Absolutely. If you want it, that if you go to the contractor saw, you're probably going to upgrade it in the future anyway. So you do you want a stepping stone, or you just want to jump all the way across the pond in one go?
Get there. Yeah.
Yeah. Look at it this way. I worked on a contractor saw, very nice Delta contractor saw, for probably 8 years. And then I eventually ended up going entirely into hand tools and sold the table saw. So if you want to end up like me,
you don't want to be like Shannon.
Buy a contractor saw.
Who wants to be like Shannon? No one wants to be like Shannon.
Welcome to the dark side, my friend. But if you want to, you know, stay, you know, working with that table saw, then don't tempt fate, man. Go straight to
first. It's hand tools. Then you're buying bicycles that you don't need. It's a whole thing.
Right.
You don't want to go down his path.
Then you're like getting healthy.
Yeah, and how, like.
Then you gotta lose weight.
It's completely
and eat better food.
It's completely hypocritical too. Like, it's like all hand tools in the shop, but, you know, electronic shifting on the bike and Bluetooth.
If they get to post gross pictures of you sweating on Instagram that other people have to look at, you don't want to be there. Save yourself, man.
Oh, man.
Sweaty man boots.
All right, well, that's going to do it for us today. Family owned since 1954, Rockler is your go-to source for high quality and innovative woodworking tools, finishing supplies, hardware, lumber, and expert advice. Whether you're building a simple bookshelf, a custom desk, or new kitchen cabinets, Rockler has everything you need to make your next project a success. Visit rockler.com. Excuse me, I told you, tough day. Visit rockler.com for a store near you, or use the code WOODTALK, that's all one word, to receive free shipping on most online orders over $39. And remember to head to rockler.com/woodtalk to enter for your chance to win a $250 gift card.
Hooray! And a free K-Pax.
That too.
Get a K-Pax.
Yeah, do that one too.
So, If you, like everybody else listening to the show, wants to find out if Justin's wife has a sister, go to woodtalkshow.com. You can fill out the contact form there, or you can just send us an email or record a voicemail with your proposal to Justin's wife's sister. Send those to woodtalkshow@gmail.com.
Oh, man.
You can also hit us up on our Instagram page. Margaret would be happy to find out if Justin's wife has a sister. And yeah, that's all I can say. Send in those queries.
People used to ask me about that with Nicole. They would be like, does she have a sister? I'm like, no, she's got a brother. I can give you his number, though, if you're interested. He's a pretty cool guy. Oh, boy. All right. Well, thank you for listening, everybody, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
Good night and good luck.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.